On the programme, Image, Space, Light, the art and golden vision of Patrick Scott. Hello and welcome to Arts Tonight.
I went to London the day the war broke out, 1939. There was a big Cézanne exhibition on there, and I was fascinated immediately by Cézanne. That's how I really got totally involved in art.
The voice there of Patrick Scott, an artist whose work has added immeasurably to the store of Irish cultural life over seven decades and more, and whose art has shaped a quiet, contemplative space which illuminates living and asserts the enduring worth of visual art, design and the act of making. A major exhibition of Patrick Scott's work opens next week at Visual in Carlow and the Irish Museum of Modern Art at Kilmainham in Dublin. The two spaces will show work that reflects Scott's prodigious output as a painter, designer and architect. The celebrated and instantly recognisable gold paintings, early works from the 1940s, tapestries, rugs, screens and his exquisite series of meditation tables and more. Patrick Scott, Image Space Light, brings together over 100 pieces in the biggest single representation of his remarkable work and career. Tonight we visit the Garden Gallery at IMA and Visual in Carlow. Meet Scott's partner and collaborator Eric Pearce, exhibition curator Christina Kennedy and artist Corbin Walker, who has made his own response to Scott's work as part of the exhibition. But first, joining me in studio to consider the work, working life and legacy of Patrick Scott are critic Aidan Dunn, who has written extensively on Scott's art, Barbara Dawson, director of the Dublin City Gallery, the Hugh Lane, and joining me later, Neil Scott of architect Scott Talon Walker, closely associated with Patrick Scott's early work, and from Galway, Lelia Doolan on Scott's theatre set designs and sharing memories of working with him. Aidan Dunn, for people who don't know Patrick Scott's work, remind us of what he has done and how singular and diverse his work has been and is.
Well, it has been extraordinarily diverse. I was going to say that Patrick is a bit like a kind of Zelig character in 20th century Irish cultural history. But the point about Zelig was that he wasn't really doing anything. He just happened to be in all these places next to prominent people. Whereas Pat was in all those places next to prominent people, but he was also doing an essential job usually on every occasion. Like from the 1940s, he's been pretty much a constant in every important initiative. And also, very importantly, doing his own personal work throughout the entire thing. In the 1940s, he was associated with the Whitestack group, who were basically a group of conscientious objectors who resided in Ireland during the war years. And they were the most avant-garde thing in Irish art at the time, and Pat began to associate with them. And that was his education, I think, in painting. And then that launched him into the freedom of finding his own voice eventually, which he did throughout the 1950s.
Of course, he trained as an architect before that, and we'll talk about that later. But the certainly the White Stag movement seeming to launch him into his own art.
Very much so, into his own art. Yes, while he was doing all this, he had a very public career. He went to work for Michael Scott as an architect in 1945. He played a central role in Bussars, which is perhaps the most important initiative in Irish architecture of the time. He also was very, very active as a designer in the Signa Group, which was set up by Louis Le Brocchi and Michael Scott. He wasn't just a peripheral figure in that. He was central to it all. He then represented Ireland in Venice in 1960. He worked on, say, John Huston's house in Galway, which travelling to and fro gave him inspiration for a large number of his paintings, looking at the light over the bog as he travelled there in the 1950s. Then he was associated with the establishment of the Kilkenny Design Workshops then, and then with the establishment of ROSC. So it's quite extraordinary as a list of achievements and associations.
Barbara Dawson, Patrick Scott's association with the Dublin City Gallery, the Hugh Lane, you know, a very important one, long established. The last big exhibition of his work, you know, the retrospective there in 2002. And I know there's work from the gallery's collection in this new exhibition between IMA and Visual. So somebody with a very strong connection to your gallery.
Oh, yes, Pat, in fact, Large Solar Device, which is part of the exhibition in IMA, was one of the first paintings that was ever actually bought by the gallery with the public funds. And so it was a very important work for us to have. The 2002 retrospective was marvellous because it actually, just as Aidan said, we had paintings, but we also had furniture design in that and also drawings. And so you could see both the desire, you know, his interest. He was he's trained as an architect, as he says himself. Nobody trained really to earn money as an artist, so you did architecture. And there's always this interest, spatial concerns. But then you see in the art, you know, his sort of his desire for these order and harmony and shape, which certainly came through. But just reminding me of the Signa Group, you know, he did design the CIE colours for the trains, and it's orange and white over black. And when asked about it, he said it was the colour of one of his cats, because he loves cats, as you know.
That's right, of course, he did the illustrations for the wonderful book, Maurice Craig's book on the poetry on cats. Beautiful paintings. But The device paintings, you mentioned that terrific one in the Hugh Lane. Remind us of those and their particular power.
I would think they're among... Pat always works in series, and I find that very interesting. It's a very interesting thing in an artist's career. And these are the device paintings that came about in the early 60s. Now, Pat had started at this stage to experiment, got quite confident in his experimentation with paint, and he was pouring paint onto unprimed canvas. He had these bog paintings, as you mentioned, going over to design John Hewson's house. He was going through the bogs, and the luminescence of the light on the bogs encouraged that. And out of that, then, these paintings were, in some way, a protest against the nuclear testings. And they're really, really marvellous. The one that we have in the gallery, Large Solar Device, is this huge, big, burnt orange sphere. And out of this bleeds the colour onto the canvas and right down, almost off the frame of the canvas. And it's in two parts, two canvases stuck together vertically. And the line between them insinuates or indicates a horizon line, but it's and the bleed around the edges is quite faded. So it's both beautiful, magnificent, and it looks as if this massive white heat is going to eventually fade away and pour out into the universe below. And so it's both sort of diabolical because it's a horrific thing and the power of it, and also it's magnificent because it is a magnificent and beautiful thing when it does happen. And this notion of sort of harmony and the sphere and order, as well as then sort of looking at mankind and nature in a certain way, is very much Pat's spot, very formal, very, very interesting.
Harmony and the sphere, you know, central to so much of what he did and does. Aidan mentioned there the White Stag movement, a really important part of the history of visual art in Ireland, and one that perhaps we don't quite know enough about.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I agree with Aidan. Very important in Ireland. I mean, an island culture during the war, so doubly kind of cut off from communication with your peers and other interested groups in Europe. So the White Stag coming to Dublin, I think talking to Pat, and I think Aidan would agree, very important, because he was looking at the world in like the pheasant, the cat, the bird, but he wasn't putting them in a kind of a three-dimensional structure. He was kind of putting them, layering them on a surface. And the White Stag come around and they have this sort of subjective surrealism as they wish to portray something. And it's a liberation, but it's also, wasn't it? It was also
a
feeding of communication, like what you're thinking, Basil Rackesy, Kenneth Hall, then the Irish and those that were in England, some of them I think were of Central European extraction. And that makes a great mix. And I think that Pat not only drew from that, but he also contributed to that. And I think it was one of the very important for him.
And some of his work from those years, from the 40s, associated with the White Stag movement, can be seen in the exhibition at IMA, in the Garden Galleries at IMA. And the curator, Christina Kennedy, showed me some of that work and talked about it.
There's one wonderful little work called Renvile, which is the simplicity itself. The lines pick out the wrought iron gate and the railings. However, if you look over those, you see in the distance the sea and a boat, a ship sailing across the horizon. And it is a wonderful piece realised with the minimal of means, a detail in one way of a marvellous perspective, but brought into immediate comprehension by the way in which Patrick has captured it.
And it's lovely. It was blue and white. The blue of the horizon, the sea, and the white of the wrought iron is beautiful. It's just so simple.
Exactly, and the pale blue of the boat as it moves across the horizon.
Could almost be Greece, but of course it's...
I think Patrick's works do possess a sort of a Polonian quality in the way in which he manages in a very classical way his use of line and the sphere and the segment. And as I say, we see that right through his entire career.
Christina Kennedy there at IMA. Aidan Dunn, Pat Scott's years as an architect, those, I think it was about 15 to 20 years of, kind of first of all, formal training, of studying, working with Scott Talon Walker, really formative in terms of his own vision and making it possible for him to become an artist.
Yes, it did make it possible. But he wore those years very lightly in the sense that his accounts of them is actually very funny. And it sounds very serious to be working for the most important architectural practice in Ireland in the modernist sense at the time. But actually, by his own account, there was an awful lot of work, but there was also an awful lot of play. And for example, Michael Scott he describes as very much a front of house figure who would wine and dine the clients, and while they were all slaving away back in the office to try and bring the projects together. And he described himself as a reluctant architect, and I think that he was reluctant, but he was fully engaged, but he was reluctant to the extent that his mind was always elsewhere. And very quickly, when he began to paint, he decided that that was really what he wanted to concentrate on and what he wanted to do. I suppose the surprising thing is that he seemed to have so much energy that he could be very, very convincing in every role that he played as an architect designer. And there was no problem about that.
Neil Scott is current chairman of Scott Talon Walker and joins me on the line from Kerry. Neil Scott, Patrick Scott, a reluctant architect by his own admission, but quite a brilliant one.
Yeah, absolutely. Vincent, you're a brilliant and you're very talented architect, and in some ways the architectural profession was less that he didn't continue on but went to become a fantastic painter. I'd just like to say that Scott Talon Walker, you're immensely proud to have enjoyed a continuous association with Pat spanning virtually 70 years. And that this association is on two levels, which I think is rather important. It's on a personal and on a professional level. All the founding directors haven't had a close friendship with Pat. Michael and Patty Scott, Robin and Dorothy Walker, were great friends. Robin and Nora Tallon and myself and Monica continue this relationship. And this friendship was nurtured by sharing a close circle of friends like Margaret and Desmond Downs, Neil and Pauline Kennedy, Tony Hickey, and many others.
And of course, a key aspect of the work of Scott Talon Walker was this this deliberate decision to bring in fine art, you know, to bring in mosaic, then later, you know, painting, tapestries, to the architectural fabric of what they did. So in a way, it was this a perfect home for somebody like Pat Scott.
Oh, absolutely. Well, it's been a fundamental, I think we are unique in Ireland, and unique from what I know really in amongst architects, that it's been the founding principle of the practice to incorporate art where we can in every building that we do. And if you take the first major public building that Michael Scott did, which is the New York World Fair Pavilion, where the sculpture outside, Eric Honecker, did this wonderful sculpture, Eric Gill did the lettering, and Sean Keaton did a mural inside. And that tradition is carried through. And the artists that we've worked with, numerous artists, but the artist probably we've worked with most in our buildings is Pat, because of the long association and because of our great regard for the work he does. And I think part is because of him trained as an architect, he is very sensitive to the locations. When we give him a commission for a space, he responds to it in absolutely the most appropriate manner.
And, of course, he famously designed an annual Christmas card for you for, I think, about three decades.
right. But that's, well, as I said, it's our relationship has gone over 70 years. And Ian Imma, this your series of the cards, I think from 1979 up until the last review, just about 2 years ago, and he did every year. And he did, I mean, numerous other, I mean, like, for example, if you just take, well, it spans entirely, Aidan mentioned the Rosk exhibition. The interior of the RDS, which is a rather dreary industrial space, the exhibition hall, was transformed into the most magical, you know, a gallery for displaying art, which was Pat's, you know, conception and design, which he clad the walls and the ceiling with muslin, creating this wonderful white space. And he did the banners. You know, if anybody was alive or remembers the papal mass in, you know, 79, the wonderful banners that flanked the altar, Pat, you know, did that. He did down in the Clarion Hotel. He did an installation of spheres, you know, of gold-leafed spheres, you know, decorating the atrium. I mean, his talents are, you know, creative talents are really... You can ask Pat to do anything, in my opinion, and he would come up with the most novel and brilliant concept.
And I presume you're very happy to see this exhibition, Image Space Light, that will celebrate, you know, that the architectural aspect of his work as well as all the rest. And it is quite phenomenal to consider what he has done over those 75 years.
Absolutely. But that's when your Barbara talked about the thing that amazed, you know, me most about the exhibition in the Municipal was, and Barbara talked about a series, the Pat works in series, which is quite right. But you tend to think, and he concentrates in that series for some number of years, and you think that's, you know, the only one he's doing. It's when you saw that exhibition and you saw the range of work you see that Pat had done, and each of them, and the quality of every one of them, it was staggering and most impressive.
Neil Scott, thanks very much indeed for talking to us. Now, In Visual in Carlo, Patrick Scott's partner, collaborator and fellow maker, Eric Pierce, shared this insight into Scott's way of working in making a series of gestural drawings which are on exhibition In Visual.
He would do them as a way of unblocking what he felt was a block, a creative block. They're unlike the gold paintings in that they're not considered beforehand. Now, up in Wicklow, there's a pole with a piece of cotton attached to it, about 2 foot long, and the cotton would be about that as well, and the end would be frayed. So he would hit the paper with this. I think I'm the only person who assisted once by taking page after page. It came in a bundle of 100, and I moved them so that he could continue the gestural action. I also witnessed the editing of them. And of the 100, he might put one to the left, two to the right, another one to the left, three to the right. Of the 100, I think about 30 were acceptable. The ones that weren't acceptable were used to light the fire. I never quite got it. Why? What made the difference between them? What was acceptable, what wasn't? But this was his editing process. And there was a further one where he would decide which was the top and which was the bottom. And the signature would then be on the bottom. And that would be another editing of the image. What Pat was doing then was emptying the mind. We called it taming the monkey. The thoughts come through and you've got to be able to show them the door and just observe. That's something that Patrick Scott has. I'm not sure where he got it from, but I've watched him in his studio contemplate and be quiet and empty the mind.
Eric Pierce there in Visual in Carlo. Aidan Dunn, fascinating to get that glimpse into the way Scott works.
Oh, yes. No, I think he always worked with that extraordinary rigour. And I think what like, we talked about the diversity of his output and his concerns, which is quite staggering. But yet a single aesthetic runs through everything that he does. And I think that's one of the most extraordinary things about him. And I described him once as being very zen, and I think that's appropriate. I mean, he said that his most important influence as an artist was the Japanese flag, which is just a single solar disk of red against a white ground. And I think he always aimed for that kind of elegant simplicity. He was great at getting rid of clutter. Anything that shouldn't be there was immediately dispensed with. I think he was associated in the 1950s with Morris Graves, the American painter who lived here for a time, and he worked on his house up in Rathfarnham. And I think Morris was of a generation that appreciated a kind of oriental way of looking and seeing. He knew Mark Tobey, and he introduced Mark Tobey's work to Pat, that kind of Eastern calligraphic, very instinctive way of working. And I think that runs through everything from then on, that he refines it down to this kind of very simple language, and then he keeps going with that principle from that moment on. You see that as he went through the solar devices, they became simpler. Then he came up with his trademark emblem, which was the gold or the silver circle, which again is the sun, basically. And I think that that his sensibility was attuned to that in everything he did. It wasn't just his paintings being like that, or his prints, which are superb, by the way, as well. But his entire design and living philosophy had to do with that sense of elegant simplicity.
Palmer Dawson, that phrase, elegant simplicity, I think really, really goes to the core of what Patrick Scott has done in his lifetime.
Exactly what Aidan says. You know, he condenses it. Rather, there's nothing reduced in Scott's work. It becomes more concentrated. You see from the 50s, you know, this figurative, somewhat semi-quasi-figurative, moves then into a much more rigorous, if you want, for a better word, sign rather than symbol. You know, he'd gone beyond sort of stylistic, attributes. Mm. He's gone into an absolute defined mode of approach and working and thinking. And he did love the notion of contemplative and the Zen, which is in everything he does. He is such a lovely man himself, loves his cats, very warm, but absolutely rigorous in the work. I'm not at all surprised about the culling and the gesture. Are you, Aidan?
No,
you
know, not at all.
It's a wonderful idea, yeah. Whatever percentage goes into the fire.
And it's the same with his life. And his lovely things, you know, he said he himself is agnostic, but he wouldn't mind if anybody saw anything spiritual in his work. And he speaks about love being so important and just how this religions that really caused the dissent and the hate. So he himself has this inherent rigor, and the harmony is wonderful, and the contemplative harmony as the work progresses in series is marvellous.
You're listening to Arts Tonight. We're looking at the work of artist Patrick Scott ahead of the exhibition Image Space Light, which opens next week at IMA in Dublin and Visual in Carlo. Back in a moment.
Joy and modesty and love and... And where did it all come from? Well, it came from everything he looked at. He'd see something and he'd turn it around and create something fresh.
You're listening to Arts Tonight. We're considering the work of artist Patrick Scott ahead of the exhibition Image Space Light, which opens next week at IMA in Dublin and Visual in Carlow. Our guests include Aidan Dunn, critic, and Barbara Dawson, director of the Dublin City Gallery, the Hugh Lane. And joining me now from Galway, Lelia Doolan. Lelia, Patrick Scott made a number of designs for theatre in your young days as an actor, and you came to know him well. It's intriguing to think about those set designs and what they were like. I presume that, you know, you saw both the architect and the artist at work in them.
Well, I suppose we were far too young to see anything except a wonderful set, Vincent. The greatest of all of the sets, of course, in which I was involved was the set for Playboy, which is a production of Sheila Richards, the great Sheila Richards, who had a head a bit like Pat's own head. She had a wonderful lion kind of head, and Siobhan McKenna, who was playing Peg Ean in that production used to call Pat the lion-headed man. He was a most wonderfully attractive-looking fellow, of course, still is. And it was a beautiful set. I imagine if I look back now, I would see the architectural characters in it. It was a tiny cottage, west of Ireland cottage, thick walls, and there were just three sides, so you could see into Peggy's domain. But the most incredibly breathtaking thing about it, particularly in Venice, where we played in La Fenice, was to see the curtain going up at the start. We ran out, I was playing one of the girls, to see it. And there was this tiny, small, isolated place with candle-lit lighting in it. And behind it, this huge blue cyclorama with stars shining through. It was the most incredible moment. But yes, he knew what he was doing. He knew how to place it. He knew the shape of it. In fact, I recently, Eric found the model. There's a maquette of it, which I hope is going to be seen in the exhibition. And we had a look at it, and by golly, it brought back some great memories. And there were some great nights and times on that tour anyway.
Of course, that was the same year that Patrick Scott represented Ireland at the Venice Biennale in 1960. So you were back in Venice then as well. And it must have been a great trip.
It was a wonderful trip. We met him. He was in Venice when we arrived. And we had been in Berlin and we were going on to Frankfurt. It was an amazing tour. And the night we played the Fenice, we were leaving the following morning, I think at 6 o'clock or something on a flight. So, of course, nobody went to bed. And there were copious libations and there was, I think, dinner of tripe and all those kinds of delicacies. And we finally all went off to the airport at 5 o'clock or something like that, staggering away. But Pat didn't have a ticket for the flight. But Siobhan had decided that she was going to persuade Alitalia to put him on board. So there were a few extraordinary moments with people smoking on the tarmac and Siobhan saying, "If Pat Scott is not on this plane, and I must say a rosary." And there were, I have to say, memorable instances with various members of the cast standing around. And poor Pat did not, in fact, get on that flight. We left him behind us. But it was an extremely typical kind of moment among us lot of ragamuffin play people.
Of course, he also designed O'Casey's Plan of the Stars, also for Sheila Richards at the Abbey. And had worked for McLeanmore, I think, coming up with a generic set for Shakespeare plays. I mean, it's fascinating to think of that side of his work. Also going into film, because I think he also worked on the sets for the film version of Playboy shot in Kerry, again with Siobhan McKenna.
Brian Desmond Hurst directed it, and a young man who should never have been put into playing Playboy played Playboy. It was at Inch in the most incredibly beautiful long strand, and indeed Pat was there, and lots of Irish friends and players were there. And yes, he was that man. He was that soldier who made things happen. And of course, his knowledge of architecture was of great help to his work in filmmaking. And I've had the good fortune, of course, to have him involved in the cinema that we're building in Galway, where his incredibly beautiful, beautiful windows, Eric Pierce, his marriage partner and dear, dear friend, has worked with Pat to create these luminous, joyous, amazing windows, scarlets and greens and blues. And, oh, I mean, they're just going to be such... they're going to be just such a delight for people to see the light coming in when they're indoors, and at night to see the lights outside winking kaleidoscopically at them as they pass.
They are wonderful. I mean, we were privileged to see them. When we visited the cinema there a couple of months ago, and they are wonderful. They will remind people of the wonder of what Patrick Scott does. And has done in his life.
Yes. And don't forget his wonderful, wonderful sense of humour. I mean, Pat is one of the most puckish characters in my long, long, loving friendship with him. Him and Pat Mac, of course. They were the Pats, the golden boys, the beautiful-looking men, very attractive, handsome, lovely, friendly people. And Pat had a fabulous, has a fabulous sense of humour still, bless him. And he's a very creative and inventive dancer. I was talking to Eric last night about his inventiveness as a dancer. I remember once dancing with him. He had a slight vanity, I think, about his abilities as a dancer. Dancing in a straight line with Pat weaving and dodging and waving a scarf. Absolutely brilliant. I once had a jacket, the back of which was E-L-L-E. And Pat always called me Lil. So he took out the two E's and he put an I in between. And so wherever I went, people said, oh, Lil. And he was very pleased about that.
Diamond Lil.
He was just a great companion. He is a great companion. He is just one of the dearest, dearest friends of my life.
Lelia Doolan, thanks so much for talking to us. Aidan Dunn, fascinating to think of that aspect again of Patrick Scott's work, you know, the theatre design, the work in film. And as you say, it's all of a piece. There's a single aesthetic running through it all that unites all that diversity.
I think there is a single aesthetic, yes, and I think that's one of the most important things about him. But as Barbara said earlier, that there's a certain love that comes through as well in his work. So I wouldn't like it to sound too cold and objective, because I think the way that Lila talked about him there, that so many people are so, so fond of him, quite genuinely, and there is no side to him. And I think that comes through as well in the way that he's been able to work with everyone across a huge variety of different fields, very creatively, very positively. And I think if you had to sum up his influence in one word on Irish art and culture and life in more than half a century, I'd say positive, a positive, good influence towards better design, better art, better way of living.
We talked earlier about the bog paintings, you know, again with the different phases of his work, you know, the famous gold paintings, but the bog paintings, very particular as well, inspired by the bogs of the Midlands, you know, as he travelled by train to Galway to work on John Huston's house in Connemara. And in the basement area of the Garden Galleries at Imma, curator Christina Kennedy describes one of those particular bog paintings and how Patrick Scott made them.
He's used the linen canvas itself as part of the, in realising the painting, the roughness and the texture of it is so attractive. It gives it a wonderful quality. And it absorbs then, you know, he's soaked the canvas with different shades, I suppose, of browns and colours sort of inspired by the bog. And you have this wonderful sort of gradient of colours as it seeps down. It's so suggestive of the bog itself, the painting.
Yes.
And then it's highlighted, if you like, by flecks of what are bog flowers and bog cotton in the centre of the composition. And you have a wonderful suggestion of the setting sun on the horizon, just a smear, in a way, of red, subtle red, pinky red pigment. And then above that, white tempera, very thin veils of white which have been applied. So it's so evocative of the atmosphere of the bog and the time of day. And then the whole lot sort of over, I suppose, almost like sprayed with this black ink, which then falls in linear vertical lines, suggestive of the reeds and the different flora of the bog.
You were saying that he had a very particular way of working at times, that he sometimes blew paint onto a canvas.
During the 50s, he experimented with blowing paint through a straw in order to get that, I suppose, accidental, almost, spontaneous effect on the canvas. And he did that on a number of paintings, on hardboard and on canvas, and they have different effects on both, as you can imagine. But it was, it just lends the work such an immediacy and a freshness, which with a work like this, 50 years later, it doesn't, it sings, and it's as alive as it was when it was painted.
Curator Christina Kennedy there at Imma. Barbara Dawson, I suppose most people may know Patrick Scott's gold paintings best, you know, those iconic gold leaf sun shapes with their serenity and Eastern, almost Zen-like feeling. And one can see why they are so recognised and celebrated. And again, they seem, even though they appear very different, for instance, to the bog paintings, there's somehow this indefinable quality that unites them all.
Yes, the gold, of course, is a light as well, and it doesn't fade, and it's this radiance that Pat always loved the sun. He's a sun worshipper. He looks on the sun as giving light, and I think this very positive thought process, very meditative but positive thought process, that is absolutely, as Aidan says, runs right through the work. And you can see that in the gold paintings, and that it's technically marvelous. It's something that's uniquely Pat, with the sort of very very light, if you like, colours on the canvas. You know, the sort of spread across the canvas, and it does. There's a certain underlying search and thought process to go beyond what you see at first. Beyond the initial, to go beyond that and to look further. And I was just thinking when you were talking there, we're so lucky that he's still with us, because it's only now, even though we had a retrospective in 2002, it's only now really that you appreciate the extraordinary talent and achievements of Pat Scott. I mean, the man is brilliant. And if you started off in architecture looking at the mosaics under Bosaris and then walked all the way to Galway to see his new windows in the cinema, I mean, via the Hugh Lane and Imma and tapestries in buildings, take the train which he designed at the Signa with the colours. I mean, Pat Scott walks the country.
And his work in that new wing of the Mater, you know, it's quite extraordinary.
So you could do a whole, couldn't you,
yes, you
Aidan?
Could.
You could walk through Ireland with Pat Scott and it would be what we call the best of Irish, wouldn't it?
It would be quite a map.
Yeah, it would be quite a map.
It's one that should be done. Speaking of the gold paintings, Aidan, I suppose, one of the striking aspects of the way Patrick Scott has worked is that there have been periods where he has been almost silent, where he has gone into a quiet mode and then re-emerged to make work. And he has never been, seems to have been afraid of that, to say there are times when you stand back and wait for the work to come, but also, I suppose, waiting constantly with that work ethic within him.
Yes, absolutely. He's been very open in talking about that. And I think there have been several sort of frustrating times for him. And he's quite candid about saying that it is terribly frustrating to arrive at a kind of dead end and not know what to do. But often that's presaged some sort of great move forward in his work. So it has been a positive thing as well in the end. But I think undoubted pain goes into it along the way. And He does have the patience, I think, to wait, and that comes through, and that's served him very well in the long run.
Well, it's rare to hear Patrick Scott himself talk about his paintings, but here he is in an interview from The Works on RTÉ1 television last year on how he started to paint in gold.
Well, I worked with Michael Scott's office, you know. And we worked on very interesting buildings. Bosaris was going on, you know, and there was Four Provinces House. And that's where I met gold. Michael said to me, would you ever colour in the arms of the Four Provinces? But it was a three-dimensional one on it. And part of it had to have gold leaf. So I had to buy a little book of gold leaf. I put one on the unprimed canvas that I was working on, and I thought that the gold on the canvas is just perfect, I think.
Patrick Scott there. And at Visual in Carlo, Eric Pierce showed me three recent works by Patrick Scott which have not been exhibited before. Three exquisite paintings that seem to draw together so much of what he has done in his lifetime.
We have three large gold discs, and we have three different treatments of the colour black, and then on the third one we have silver. The one in the centre, which is just gold disc floating above a horizontal black band. There's no tempera in the painting. To me, this is almost the ultimate gold painting. It's the one that, it is the last one, but it just, for me, says this is the sign. This is what all the gold paintings have worked towards, this one painting. He's done a few after that, but they're smaller and they're more playful. This is the painting that, for me, it's the last most wonderful piece.
I can see why he didn't want to let go of the front.
No, there was no rush to get rid of these three. So, but I'm afraid they're gone now, out of the studio, and they're here for everybody to enjoy and see. And it's wonderful to see them surrounded by all the other ones. There is a painting here, which is a half circle of gold, and below it, a column of thin lines of tempera. He was always practical. The reason why we've got these thin lines of tempera is because he discovered very thin masking tape. And he bought the stock of very thin masking tape and brought it into the studio and said, now, let's go. And this opened another door of the pictorial, but always within the confines of tempera gold canvas. You see this with the thin masking tape, he was able to make circles with it and quite tight arcs because it allowed. So this opened up more avenues and he explored it. And then I think the masking tape ran out. And so that was that.
Designer and furniture maker Eric Pierce there, Patrick Scott's partner at Visual in Carlow. The practical side of Maiden, that's a great insight into somebody who sees what's there in front of him and how it can be used,
yes,
within his work.
Absolutely true. And I think I remember he once said that whenever he doesn't know what to do when he's in the studio, he draws a circle because that'll get you going in some direction. I think his experience as a designer, I think, is really important in this way, that a designer is given a brief and has to do something within limitations. And I think he really liked limitations and he liked having a brief. I can imagine that he would like having the masking tape defining how far he was going to go and what he was going to do. I think his association with Stony Road Press is a case in point. He did absolutely superb series of prints with Stony Road. And they came to him and asked him to do them. And he remarked that it hadn't occurred to him to make any more prints. But once they put it to him, he felt it was a problem that should be solved and tackled. And I think that kind of thing of responding to an invitation brings out the best in him. And that is the old designer instinct coming out.
Barbara, again, that designer instinct and the practical side of him, you experienced that firsthand in the Hugh Lane during the retrospective.
Well, we always, Pat's marvellous with colour. Even the gold and the silver are just so beautifully juxtaposed with the canvases. But when we were doing this retrospective with him, I heard we had the walls all white and we thought it was ultra cool. And I heard a rumour that Pat was thinking of colour, and the story goes that I had to go somewhere to do something. And whilst I was away, Pat got the colours out, and not quite that the face was painted. But looking back at those photographs, it was absolutely marvellous colours, marvellous reds, marvellous blues, marvellous greens. We might get them back in to do it again. It was really quite funny, but the works looked superb, and that is the marrying of the artist and the designer and this great, great sense of colour.
That's one of the very striking aspects of the work for me as well, is his exquisite use of colour. I mean, it's so particular and it's sometimes muted, but you know, he knows how to use colour in a quite unique way, I think.
Yeah, I think he's about the rational man, practical man, but he's also fearless in his pursuit of that image that he wants to catch.
Yeah. Another artist fearless in pursuit of what he wants to catch, of course, is Corbin Walker, who's curated one section of the exhibition at Visual in Carlow, his parents, Dorothy and Robin Walker, were, of course, close friends of Patrick Scott, and as well as selecting works for the Link Gallery at Visual, Corbin Walker has also made his own artistic response to Scott's work. I met him as he was installing that work in Visual.
It's a response to Pat's work as a, well, first of all, as an architect, then as a kind of a curator, if you like, and a designer, and all combined in the Rosca exhibitions. So there are two parts, if you like, this installation. There are two squares, one blue and one green, of vinyl that will be applied to the windows of this Link Gallery. And then these drawings will hang in front of that. And it's a six-part drawing of a AutoCAD drawing printed on clear film. So it'll have a kind of a strange presence in the space, but it will actually kind of work with the architecture of the space, which is something that I like to incorporate. But at the same time, you'll be barely able to see it. So it'll be quite visual, but then not very much visual at all or visible. And then the drawing itself is an array of a line that's kind of mapped over a degree, a wide-angle degree, and they're hung vertically. So it kind of juxtaposes this very long, elongated space.
So it's going to take up a lot of the space here. The
three central window panes, on either side of the column. And then it'll obviously have a relationship to the pond.
Mm. We're looking out through the windows here,
yes.
Out onto that water feature, the pond, and we're just saying that at night with the lights, I think it probably will have a very particular effect
at
as well.
The opening, it should have an interesting effect of it kind of wavering between the pond and the gallery space, which is again something that I like to do, is just to use some element of the actual physical exhibition space. And this was something, that I felt had to be kind of done very delicately, because for one, it's Pat's exhibition, and when Christina asked me to make a work in response to choosing some of his paintings, it was quite an odd request in one way, but also quite great to have this opportunity to work with Pat, literally, in this kind of way.
Artist Corbin Walker there at Visual in Carlow. Aidan Dunn, one of the striking aspects of the use of the space in Visual as well is the display of Patrick Scott's tapestries. They are absolutely exquisite. And again, we're talking about the use of colour there a few moments ago. The use of colour in those is quite extraordinary.
They are extraordinary. And he sort of, in the tapestries particularly, it's interesting that he allows himself to use colour in a way that he's more restrained about, in his paintings and his prints. I must say that often art lovers, their hearts sink when you say, oh, so-and-so is a great colourist, because you know that you're going to be hit over the head with garish colour. And in Patrick's tapestries, what he shows is how you can orchestrate intense, really brilliant colour very, very cleverly and well, and on a great scale often, to produce these marvellous, beautiful effects.
And I suppose, again, it's a celebration of craft and that marrying of craft and fine art that he was such a part of through Signa Designs, through so much of what he did, Kilkenny Design. It all of that, I think, is a very important part as well of what we celebrate in this exhibition.
Yes, I mean, it's interesting that say, Louis LaRocque and Pat has such a strong relationship with tapestry, and it's kind of unusual. I mean, it's not commonplace, and it's interesting that they were led in that direction and that they embraced it so fruitfully. Mm-hmm. And in both their cases, it produced a very important strand of each of their work.
Barbara Dawson, it was this major exhibition of Patrick Scott's work should bring a new generation of people to an understanding and appreciation of what he has achieved and given us, almost in the way that the Eileen Gray exhibition did in the past few months.
I think it's congratulations to Emma and to Christina Kennedy and all the team that are bringing this together. It's marvellous to have this exhibition in the two venues. It will show us again the extraordinary talents of one individual, of Pat Scott. And as I said earlier, so happy that he's still with us, because it gives us a chance whilst he's still here to review that. It's a deeper and it's different from Eileen Gray. Eileen Gray was an architect. Pat Scott is an artist, architect, designer. I mean, I don't want to use any of those words like Renaissance man. He doesn't have followers. You can see why. He's actually quite singular in himself. But he has his personality, his playfulness, his rigour, his desire for order, and a very, very informed and intelligent simplicity which he brings to his life and to his work will be seen in this exhibition. I think it's absolutely essential for us, you know, to kind of understand ourselves in the country, is to go and see the work of Pat Scott through the decades and see, you know, all the collaborators that were there. Aidan mentioned Louis Labrocque and others, and to understand a part of our psyche, our cultural psyche. So it's a hugely important exhibition and one that I'm really looking forward to seeing many times.
Aidan, it is like this insight into the artistic and cultural life of the modern state. And Scott's life seems to encompass all of that.
Indeed it does. I mean, it's a bit daunting, actually, when you look at the entire scope of his activities in that way. And it's interesting that you mentioned Eileen Gray, because in a way, I think that exhibition was such a revelation in that sense as well, in terms of the scope of what she did, apart from the individual brilliance of each thing. And I think this is very important in terms of our getting a sense of how important Pat Scott was, because it should be said that he's not a showman or a flamboyant personality. He's very, very quiet. He's a quiet worker type of person more than a showman or a self-promoter.
And he really wants to let the work speak for itself.
He definitely does. He very much does.
And speak it will, I think, in volumes. Yes. In this exhibition. Thanks to you both, Aidan Dunn and Barbara Dawson. Thanks also to Neil Scott, Lelia Doolan, Eric Pierce, Christina Kennedy and Corbin Walker, and all at IMA and Visual. Patrick Scott, Image, Space, Light opens at the Garden Galleries at IMA and at Visual in Carlow on Sunday next, February the 16th. Corbin Walker will talk about his response to Patrick Scott's work in the Link Space in Visual tomorrow evening at 5:30. Call 059-917-24 to book for that. And IMA has published a collection of essays and assessments of Patrick Scott's work. Barbara Dawson, Peter Lamb, Brian O'Doherty and Mel Gooding among the contributors, and some wonderful illustrations with that as well. The exhibition in Dublin and Carlow runs until mid-February. We leave the last word tonight to Eric Pierce. Here he is sharing an insight into Patrick Scott's characteristic modesty and humour. A memory of Scott's response to Taoiseach Enda Kenny describing him as an icon at the opening of an exhibition.
I recall a moment 2 years ago when the Arts Council had an exhibition touring the country of their collection called Into the Light, and they had purchased one of Pat's paintings. And on the night of the opening, Enda Kenny in the Hugh Lane was giving his speech, and Pat was in the row of luminaries. And he was fidgeting with his hands and glancing over to me, and I thought, something's up. So after the speeches, I went over to him and asked him, was he fine? He berated me for forgetting his hearing aid, said he couldn't hear anything. And I said, well, you were being called an icon, and at least twice. What's it like? And he just looked at me and went, huh, let icons be icons.
And you can hear a full interview with Eric Pierce and see a few photos from Visual in Carlow and images of Patrick Scott's work on our website, Arts Tonight, on the RTE site, rte.ie. And you can also listen back, of course, to previous programmes in the Arts Tonight series on that webpage as well. That's it. Till next week, join us next Monday at 10 for a programme remembering Pete Seeger. Till then, from all of us, good night.